may require.
Chairman, I think it is or will be able to pay.
Now, I cite 137-200, the cost and disbursement of criminal action shall be taxed against a defendant upon conviction. And then 137-205 provides for taxation against a defendant for the cost of legal assistance, is what you're talking about. And both of those would be repealed by this section.
This goes beyond that, doesn't it, Bob?
No, I don't think it does, really. As a matter of fact, I think it's more restrictive because we say that the cost shall be limited to those specially incurred. And besides that, we make it discretionary, whereas the present statute is mandatory. As a matter of fact, the way I read it, it says shall.
What is the cover? I don't think now I'm trying to a case of requiring psychiatric testimony that create an expert's testimony. And the state called for conviction. That would be assessed in the state's cost. I think it's going to do it. Open this session.
We got a good under the present statute, I believe, couldn't you?
I think you could, and I just think that the courts don't do it.
Well, you never file a cost bill.
Well, I don't know. We're practically in Lane County for about a year and a half. We routinely file a cost bill in every felony conviction. We routinely file it. We had a form made up here. But we usually didn't get cost because for the simple reason the guy wasn't able to pay it.
Did you get my note from what's his name?
Trial level.
No. Yeah. It seems to me we got two or three problems here. We got one, the problem of an indigent defendant who's picked up on the street for some hootenanny and gets himself a jackpot, spends some time in jail, gets tried, and we say that the court could require a convicted defendant to pay his costs. Doesn't have any assets, never likely to have. The next one is the guy who's picked up by the Portland police for driving while under the influence goes to municipal court or district court, doesn't like the findings, so he files notice of appeal, and here we are, months and a year later, never having really decided the thing. The guy is driving, drinking, doing all the other things in this interim period. I don't know whether we can get at that problem here or not.
Well, Don, if we were to delete this and not accept it, would you contemplate leading in these two statutes that we have on it?
Well, that if the commission thinks we should have cost tax against the defendant, yeah, I think we should leave in what we have.
Well, if Carl thinks that this is not as restrictive as we think, we might, instead of wanting something in, wanting it out.
I don't know that you could assess these expert witness fees and what have you, but the cost of this witness is expanding.
Well,
seems damn unfair.
The
state can, we say we'll look at the defendant and see if he can afford to pay it, and they can pay it. The defendant's acquitted, we should tell them like the state, see if they've got the budget to pay it.
As I told John earlier, it's a ways and means question.
Well, of course, now there's another statute, 137-210. Of course, that gets into malicious prosecutions where you can order the complainant. You don't order the state, but you can order the complainant to pay the cost.
Yeah,
that's a little different situation. But now 137-200 says the costs and disbursements, and I would assume that it's up to the court to decide what are the costs and disbursements, which could include expert witness fees. And it says the costs and disbursements in a criminal action or proceeding are paid to the person rendering the service by the proper county. But in case of a judgment of conviction, such costs and disbursements shall be taxed against the defendant. So it's, the way I read that, that requires the court to do it.
Why shouldn't he?
I think he should.
Now, what about the guy who pardoned by the jury?
Well, about miscarriage of justice, so he spends 5 years on it.
What about where he's, where the jury erroneously convicts him?
Well, about he balances out.
Yeah, that balances out.
Everybody except the defendant balances out.
Well, I think this, Chairman, I think if you think that we should have some provision for allowing the court to assess costs in the proper case, I think Section 9 is better than the two statutes that are there now. It gives the court more discretion, and it's not mandatory on the court to do it, and we've also built into our draft criteria for the court to follow in assessing.
Well, Chairman, let me ask this question. Harold, would you favor a situation in which the defendant would be entitled to costs in every case in which he quit?
You know very well that there are a number of cases where there's an acquittal by reason of the fact that the jury is sympathizing with this fellow because of the time and the trouble and the expense he's gone to already.
Or the beyond any reason to doubt.
Yeah. Where he's, where
probability
he's,
is.
He's probably guilty under preponderance of the evidence, but not guilty under
What do you do? Does the court have power to, in Oregon, judges get into the summary judgment business on criminal matters in the state? Not any chance. No
just
way.
Just on murders and stuff.
No, summary judgment.
Well, what is a summary judgment in a criminal case? What do you mean?
Well, you don't have.
You don't have?
Well, I see what you mean. That's why I don't know what they are.
I would say that I'd be more advised before the defendant signs the option to state
can't
the court.
Yeah, the problem I see, I think there are some cases that in which it would be proper for the defendant to recover costs. The problem I see is what criteria do we legislatively establish as to which cases the defendant gets his cost, in which case he doesn't.
Jim, let me make it permissive rather than mandatory and leave it up to the discretion of the court.
Jim, but you can't just say in every case in which, except those in which it's been a jury pardon, or some other equal to eligible thing. Mr. Publisher here.
Who's going to
have some
county?
Kind of criteria.
It's better not state.
Well, that's a pretty good question, whether it's the state or the county.
Turn the DA out for being a beneficial patient, wasting taxpayers' money when he could have copped him out and sent him.
Well, they just don't do that.
Well, I know they don't.
State provides for the district attorney, period.
And the judge.
I mean, the jury is paid for with the county.
The expert witnesses,
the investigative costs, and so forth. We should say, please do it. Boy, I can see Tom going back to the
if you're talking in terms of requiring the state to pay the costs in terms of if the defendant's acquitted, well, seem to me, honey, some really troublesome problems. And what do you mean by acquitted? What if he's found guilty of a different crime than charged in the indictment? What if he's found guilty of a lesser included offense? Is he acquitted?
Found not guilty by reason of insanity.
If he's charged with armed robbery, he's found guilty of unarmed robbery. Has he been acquitted of armed robbery? Does the state have to pay his costs?
I think you can resolve that simple enough.
Are there any states that allow the recovery of costs?
Not that I know of. There may be some, and I haven't researched that particular question.
Sounds so ridiculous to you, didn't even go into it.
Well, I want
to. I hadn't even thought about it, frankly.
Rather than spending a lot of time on this, I'm wondering if you could research that, see if you can find something, and then before the bill is, or after it's printed, you might reconsider it.
The
Would that be satisfactory, Harl? Probably best you can do under the circumstances. Because we have a time factor.
I can take it. Yes, I will be about to.
Chairman, before we have a vote on the motion, may I ask this question, Donna? What are the sort of expenditures that you would say could not be recovered as costs under this language? Talking about the DA's salary or the sheriff's salary or the
department of jurors and fees, any of those things.
Police investigation.
Well, let's take your average. Let's say it's a garden variety burglary case, and the police have investigated the breaking the service station. The detectives have spent 10 hours interviewing witnesses. Defendant and so on, so forth down the line. Would any of those costs be recoverable under your money?
No, I don't think so, because, and I think that's what's intended by the last half of sub 2, where it says, connection with the maintenance and operation of government agencies that must be made by the public, irrespective of specific.
What about the preparation of maps, charts, or graphs, or physical exhibits in connection with the prosecution? Would that be recoverable?
They're made by the county surveyor?
No.
Well, they're made by the county surveyor normally, but
they hire experts.
What if the deputy DA goes over to Honolulu and investigates the case before a trial?
You can get into a lot of money in some of these cases. Just a fierce amount.
Sure. But most of those cases are one where the defendant doesn't have anything.
The middle income guy can't qualify as indigent. He's charged with a crime. He's far worse off than the indigent is. He's provided everything.
You made yourself heard on Section 5.
It's a lot less off.
Right. Just giving him one more than an equivalent.
Question?
You've heard the question. Call the roll on Section 9, approval of Section 9.
Judge Burns? Senator Burns?
We can't accept that, thanks.
Carson?
Aye.
Chandler?
Aye.
Frost?
No.
Hodge?
No.
Jernstedt?
Aye.
Knight?
Aye.
Yeah? Chairman?
Aye. Carry. Section 10.
I can't get my way.
This allows support to be
Johnson.
Use installment payments. And the court may deem the final cost of the location of the
pension. Is there any groundswell to require that the tenant also pay interest in the amount to be established from time to time by the Oregon Newspaper Publishers Association?
I don't want that, so I don't know what they do.
Nope. Before we go into that, though, there's a motion to approve 10. Discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
No. Carry.
I'm not going time to go into this. You're really, in effect, discounting fine by a pretty substantial amount, particularly in current present interest rates.
About the reduction in payment
in
cash.
Yeah, how about let the guy down?
What if he pays to the Bank of America?
Section 11.
Now, this sets up a procedure for dealing with the defendant who has not complied with the order to pay the costs or fine. And the court, on motion of the district attorney or on its own motion, may require him to show cause why the default should not be treated as contempt of the court, and may issue a show cause citation or a warrant of arrest for his appearance. Now,
I should point out here that, as was directed by the subcommittee, this follows general. Section 11 follows Model Penal Code 203.2, Michigan Code Section 1535. But some of this language in sub 1, for example, the language may issue a show cause citation, is my language. I put it in there because I felt it was more appropriate to Oregon usage than what appeared in Michigan. Cited in under show cause or the court could issue a warrant. Then he asked to show cause why he should not be held in contempt. And then sub 3 deals with corporations, and it's the duty of the person authorized to make disbursement from the assets of the corporation to pay them, and his failure to do so may be held to be contempt unless he makes the same showing required of the defendant for your
moral has never become a treasure.
I just resigned.
And then sub 4 places limitations on the term of imprisonment. Shall not exceed 1 day for each $10 of the fine or cost, 30 days if the fine or cost were imposed upon the conviction of a violation of misdemeanor, or 1 year in any other case, whichever the shorter period. A person committed for non-payment of a fine or cost should be given credit towards payment for each day of imprisonment at the rate specified in the commitment order.
And sub would be higher than $10.
And then sub 5 says what the court can do if it's satisfied the defendant is not in contempt. And sub 6 authorizes civil methods of collection.
Isn't that $10 a day unrealistic? Why not say whatever rate the court fixes, but not less than that?
Well, I have a question as to what that language means.
So as I read it, that's what it says. It says that you've got to give them at least $10 a day credits, but you can give them more.
Don't read it that way.
Shall not exceed 1 day for each $10. 1 day for each $5.
What if you ordered to pay a fine
1 day for each $1,000,
and he doesn't pay it, and you find him guilty of contempt? How long can you send?
No, you'd be limited to 30 because that would be the shorter period. Now, that's assuming we're talking about misdemeanor.
No, but he just said it was $1,000 fine.
Well, we authorize $1,000 fine.
I mean, if it's a misdemeanor, the most you could do would be
30 days.
But if it's just plain $1,000 fine in a felony case, then he could send him. You sentence him to not more than 100 days.
Right, because that'd be the shorter period.
Well, it seems to me we ought to say whichever is the shorter period applicable, something, because
doesn't it say that whichever is the shorter period?
Clarity.
I would also have this comment. Is it wise to have a provision authorizing 1 year for contempt in a case which probably is indirect contempt in light of the U.S. Supreme Court case? Do you want to have a jury trial? Don't you run into that problem?
Right. I suppose that's a possibility, certainly, that you're going to have some difficulty if you get up into the upper reaches, the
beyond 6 months, but I'm not trying to pass the buck, but the subcommittee said this is the section we want, and this is what it says. And there is nothing in the commentary, either under the model penal code draft or in the Michigan code, that talks to this question. So I really couldn't answer it. I would think that you might get into a situation where you have a constitutional question not requiring a jury.
Yes.
Very short time to listen to the wind.
Yes.
I don't like the combination of costs and fines. Fines are a penalty. It should be treated as a penalty. And I can see the penalty collected in this manner. Costs are not a penalty, or they should not be a penalty. Because they vary independently with the type of crime that's involved. They would vary with the type of case that was presented. And I said, the length of the case and difficulty of it. I would much rather see that costs would be collected as a civil judgment and not as a matter of contempt or debtor's prison as opposed to collecting the crime.
Well, I think you're probably right. I think maybe for some reason.
Well, you would separate out costs from the section.
And apply the civil remedy to costs.
The good costs have no bearing on the culpability or the type of crime or the seriousness of the crime.
Are you about to make a motion?
Do we even take one like this?
I would move that the section be revamped to strike the costs from the method of recovery and provide for civil recovery of costs as well as civil.
And to place costs in sub 6.
Yeah.
Wherever it appears.
The present statute, though, on page 22, it points out that the 1378-180 would be retained, which provides for collection of costs by the ordinary execution process. You wouldn't need a new statute.
Well, then, if that's the
case. You wouldn't need a new statute to collect in a civil manner.
No. Yeah, in other words, if his motion passes, then we don't need a separate section. Because the existing statute would take care of it.
Right. If we just limited this to fine, I mean, yeah.
Well, then, on sub 6, which refers to fine or costs, wouldn't you have a duplication there as to costs? Well, yeah, if you took it out, you'd be all
well,
right.
Well, it wouldn't hurt to leave it in, though.
Because it applies to the installment. Yeah. All right, you've heard the motion. That's to take the contempt provisions out with respect to costs and leave the remedy only to the civil. Okay. Any further discussion on that motion? All those in favor say aye.
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 No.
Opposed, no.
No.
Carry. See, Dave, what happened to your account?
Show that going today with Representative
Austin. Can we take about 5 minutes break on the next hearing?
Well, let's adopt this as amendment. Is there a motion to adopt the 11th amendment?
So moved.
Heard the motion. Any further discussion?
Present.
All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Carry. We'll take a 5 minute recess. How are we moving, folks?
He's got to say, okay, he's the one who wanted to reset.
He doesn't dare. He doesn't dare.
Sometimes you have to give him a little of the game on.
He doesn't dare say we're falling
back. You know, I should have stopped.
I didn't want to say last
one, but I was going to be on the heights of the garden.
It
could
be worse.
Sorry,
no,
where it is.
Travel Lodge.
Is that right?
It's about on State Street, down about 3 blocks.
No, that's the.
You mean it? No, there's a Travel Lodge on State Street.
That's one with the little bear.
No, hell, it's on State Street. It's on 15th and State.
Cheaper, quicker.
Yeah.
Between 16 and 17th.
Carry on, but.
All the officers take over the town, I guess.
Since there's no hotel rooms available, I need to adjourn to Sally's.
You're responsible for the line.
I was saying, I talked a little while ago here about saving the states of money.
Hey, how is everybody? We understand you.
No, we're not underspending, no.
I don't mean underspending, but we're not overspending, we're in perfect balance. Say it, it'll be better.
Aye.
Judicial Fitness Commission's gonna have to come in to the emergency board, I want to, with the vice president, so we can tell them, no, people have to travel.
No problem at all.
Somebody's. When I come, I wanna be welcome.
See, we spent about $65,000 on the organization, right? $107,000.
Okay, Don, why don't you go ahead on authority in the current consent. Give us that preliminary good statement.
A lot of good stuff in this.
Well, this is really a fine article.
Yeah.
Really, this is basically the same article we had in the subcommittee that was so.
Yeah.
Because the subcommittee was overwhelmingly in favor of this article. Of course, it was the end of the day when we got to it. Now, first of all, the section one is the subject or a housekeeping section. Section two, it amends ORS 137.075 to pick up some language that we felt we should retain from 137.115, which is part of the sex offender sentencing statutes, which would be repealed by section 6 of this article. Now, these provisions relate to immunity provisions that we felt should be retained. No statement made by a defendant in the course of examination, for example, under this section or under certain other sections shall be used against him in any civil proceeding or any other criminal proceeding. No person shall be examined in any civil or any other criminal proceeding if any statement made by the defendant in the course of examination. No statement contained shall be the subject of any civil suit or action. And it's just to save those, since now section 137.075 incorporates those by reference, and so would be repealed to use those for your big money.
Wait a minute, Mr. Chairman. This says no statement made under an examination under this section or certain other numbered section shall be used against it. Now, for example, it says 137.320 doesn't refer to a refers to the diagnostic examination. We're making a diagnostic.
How about 1, 2, 4?
We have 1, 2, 4 refers to that the corrections division may transfer within their institutions for purposes of diagnosis and study. But 320 doesn't refer to any study. It says when the judgment includes commitment to legal and physical custody of the corrections division, the sheriff shall deliver the defendant to the warden.
So,
I'm not sure that
reference is appropriate.
You let the 420 be the rule.
Well, I don't know. 137.510 reads, the courts having jurisdiction in criminal or quasi-criminal actions, including actions for violation of municipal ordinance.
Like Johnson, I would draw the motion.
May suspend the imposition, place the defendant on probation, and put on the state of power of any judge of any court shall continue until such person is delivered to the executive head of the penal reformatory or correctional institution designated as a judgment. Now, why do we not adopt that type of language here in sub 4?
She's gone.
I got a decent one.
Looks like you need reading for me.
137.510, which is that's the probation section, actually.
But you can move that probation. Where's that going?
Settling up a bunch of mistakes.
Yeah, that was a good one. You're not involved in the active practice anymore anyway, right? I don't need this cabinet money.
Yeah.
You know, my boyfriend was there in the front room.
Why don't we just say it shall commit the defendant to the head, to the executive head of the reformatory or correctional institution designated in the judgment.
Are you moving that?
All right, Judge Byrne, motion please. Would you state the motion?
That we amend sub 4 by using the language of subsection 2 of 137.510.
Heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Well, no, wait a minute, Jim. Do you want to say the executive head of the penal reformatory correctional institution, or do you want to say to the corrections division?
He doesn't want to say the correctional division. That's what he wants.
The point is,
that's municipal.
We want to have the court be able to send him to the jail or to a correctional facility when we get around to having regional correctional. That was the purpose of it.
That's right. Well, and then also to tell them where to send the misdemeanors.
I got a couple of thoughts on this. After we get to
it. I thought there's going to be an administrator in Asia.
But we don't have that question for us yet. The thing was that I just was trying to avoid limiting it to county jails. And now you'll take care of the municipal situation with this amendment.
And if you don't, the 73 legislature will.
Another 105,000.
Is that correct, Judge Burns?
Yeah, I think we better start all over.
I'm sorry.
Representative Frost raised this question. How about the someone sentenced to a city jail, municipal? Now, how are you taking care of that?
That was one of the purposes of the amendment.
And then you interrupted.
Well,
your question.
I counted the votes. I withdraw my motion. Second his and call for the question.
All those in favor of Judge Burns' amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Whatever.
No, you explain your vote, Senator George Dent.
Section 4.
Well, I have a question on Section 3. Section 3, sub 3. We haven't approved Section 3 yet. We just amended sub 4.
Sub 3 is already the law. We just amended it by adding.
I don't like it.
You don't like the existing law?
No.
As I see it, what about problems? As I remember here a few months ago, we ran into some capacity problems within the corrections division that we were, as I see it, the corrections division has no legal authority to transfer guys from the correctional institute to the prison just because they run out of space at the correctional institute and have a little extra at the prison.
Why think they do that?
They do it, but I'm not sure that, as I understand it, they have the authority to do so under the law. They just do it administratively.
Mr. Lumley, that one of you, Dwayne, you'll know. What's the answer to that?
Yeah, we do transfer when we see a logical reason to spell out the law. I would suggest that if you're looking at any of this, that Section 2 should be just deleted out of that whole bill, because this does restrict it in terms of the requirement that we really aren't able to make a free decision where a guy goes to mission. We have to look him into the prison and then perhaps transfer to Section 3 for the correctional division. We'd like to see Section 2 struck out, first line down to the correctional division may transfer struck out of 3, and then give him a lot better deal for us.
In other words, you'd want, even if a guy was convicted of homicide, that you still want the discretion, the administrative discretion, to send in the OCI if you thought that's where he belonged. Yeah.
Now, as I read the bottom part of 3, why you're limited in your reasons for transfer, interinstitutional transfer, to these stated purposes, diagnosis, study, rehabilitation, and so forth and so on. Well, there may be a capacity reason at the OCI to send them out here to OSP.
We don't really mind that, and there ought to be some reason besides capacity. We have resources in prison camp, we have the annex, we want to have the trustee spots there, and so on. We want to have those rehabilitation things. We're not really upset about that.
What's your view on Mr. Lindley's recommendation?
Oh, I'll buy that.
Well, it's been in front of the legislature for 2 sessions. Nobody, the yellow journalists paid more attention to what was going on in the Senate Judiciary Committee.
They abolished the law. That's what they do.
This language was put into the statute in 1967 by the Senate Judiciary. As a matter of fact, I drafted it.
And abolish the Senate Judiciary.
And the reason I didn't pay this at the time, the statute which allowed the judge to commit initially to one institution or another, penitentiary or OCI, limited the judge, and the court could not send a man convicted of these crimes to OCI. So the Senate Judiciary Committee was of the opinion that, although the court hereafter, under the new law that was passed in 67, would sentence the man to the corrections division, that the corrections division should have the same limitation placed on it as far as initial institutionalizing particular kinds of defendants, and certain ones should not be sent to OCI.
We made the policy decision a couple hours ago that this was going to be a corrections division decision, but then I think you ought to make it all the way. Sent to corrections division for maximum of such and such a period of time, and then let them decide where they put him and how they treat him.
You know, Tony, you and I are probably the only two people in this room that remember when Chandler ran the class ramp and put him in law.
I wasn't a law and order man in those days. That's one of the reasons I got beat so bad.
Well, I certainly am.
You're a judge. What are you? You're the only one here.
We ought to turn him over to Wayne and say, there they are. You put him where you want him. We've told him you can let him out, send him to Tillamook, you can send him home, you put him on work release,
don't we say
that? If that's the case, we should delete sub 2 and portion of sub 3, and then, or delete portion of sub 3.
And to decrease it, please.
Yeah.
That's my motion.
The motion is that subsection 2 be deleted, and that subsection 3 amends with the third line where it says the corrections division made. And Mr. Chandler made that motion.
Second.
Is there any further discussion on the further amendment? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried. Now, Mr. Chandler, do you have another one?
Oh, yes. In this same section.
Sub 4.
I support in the state of Oregon to send a guy for incarceration of any kind is the county jails in about half the counties of the state. Maybe three quarters of them. Maybe more than that.
Charlotte, Multnomah.
Well, Multnomah County, and they can plot and escape and so forth and so on. They've got something useful to do.
That's what Don Clark is. Don Clark is on guard duty today.
Make sure that gets in the minutes.
He'll be here. It's gun control day tomorrow.
All right, Bob, go ahead.
A number of you people have gone up to see some of your customers in the jails. I've never been in Bowser County, but I've been in around a number of others, particularly smaller counties, and the cities are even worse in many cases. We're asking that some drunk out here in Staten some night to set fire to his socks and suffocate. We've lost a couple over here in Florence or someplace down there a couple of years ago. We got the same situation. Deschutes County is supposed to have a good one. It's the only one that can handle federal prisoners for three or four counties around there, but it's at the top of the courthouse, and if somebody ever sets fire to the files in the clerk's office, why, we're going to lose everybody in the prisoner up there. And it's bad enough to keep them there overnight or hold them there for a court appearance later, but it's a terrible place to put a guy when you're trying to either punish him or to teach him the error of his ways. I realize that at present it's not possible to send a guy from a misdemeanor over to OCI. I think it should be. They have room and availability for them for 90 days, that the county should be able to board them over there. They're a lot better over the off over there. Even when the rest of the population of the place is felons, misdemeanors, better off over there than it would be sitting in the county jail.
Don't we have power now to send misdemeanors to the forest camp?
Yes, we do. Well, Bob, that's a good statement of the problem. What's the solution?
I think this is too restrictive.
Where do you want to send them? How would you amend it?
Oh, I don't think that Jim's amendment that is too restrictive.
Well, it still confines them to existing places that are below the level of the state's correctional division, doesn't it?
No, it says to the executive head of the penal, reformatory, or correctional institution designated in the judgment.
Yeah, if Chandler's suggestion goes through, you'll have 3,000 of them.
We're not prepared for that. Well, I realize you're not yet prepared for them, and I suppose that if the district judge in Deschutes sends you one, you'll be all right the first week until the district judge in Multnomah County find out about it.
But Bob, that's the very reason for the addition of this language or other correction facility for the imprisonment of misdemeanors.
But we're talking about things that don't exist.
You need a separate statute permitting a misdemeanor to temporarily house a state penal facility. That's a simple matter.
Well, I just don't think we can resolve that situation here.
That isn't really relevant.
Mr. Chairman, I just mentioned we got a $75,000 FDA grant to look at that great question. Well, I agree with the votes, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chandler can count the votes and
I move we adopt section 3 as amended.
There you are. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carried. Section 4.
Section 4 is an important section dealing with
a lot of good stuff.
This is our version of what we now call the indictable misdemeanors. We limit it to Class C felonies or to one Class B felony, where that is criminal, and if there's a correction should be made here. It was called criminal dealing in drugs after this was printed, going back over our past work. We changed that to criminal activity in drugs, so that's the way it should read. It's the same crime, we just changed the title. But the court can reduce it to enter judgment for a Class A misdemeanor. So this covers a lot of territory in our new classification, because most of our felonies are Class C felonies.
This goes along with your philosophy about
penalties
are too high.
Yeah, that's right. But you put them in the county jail.
Well,
or you could. Discharge.
Yes, you can do that. But I don't think it's like a substantial number.
Yeah. I don't know.
Do you agree that this is even if it is a compromise, it would be?
And here it gives us a general statute without having to deal with each crime individually and say you send them here or there.
At our subcommittee meeting, this section was the subject of a great deal of babbling on my part.
I get one big ending.
But I want to make sure that minutes or the commentary or legislative history or something makes it clear that this power of the court in section 4 exists not merely at the initial sentencing stage, but that it continues to exist through any probationary stage or period of suspension in imposition of sentence, so that, for example, if a person is convicted of, let's say, possession of marijuana, placed on probation for 5 years, 3 years, and at some time during that period of time or at the conclusion of the probation period, that the court then enters a judgment of conviction for Class A.
Yeah.
In other words, I want to make sure that, again, let's say it's possession of marijuana, that if I put him on probation, is later revoked, that I retain the jurisdiction to
even though you have sentenced him and placed him on probation?
I have suspended imposition.
Oh, suspended, yeah.
Placed him on probation.
Yeah.
And sometime along in there, if he violates the probation, I think the court ought to have the flexibility to treat him then as a felon. And alternately, and should have the flexibility to treat him as a misdemeanor by declaring that it's a Class A misdemeanor.
Well, this is where I thought that we finally agreed on that, and the question was resolved. We had a great deal of discussion with respect to the indecisiveness of the court and making up its mind, whether it should make up its mind at the beginning or somewhere down the road. But didn't the subcommittee agree that this, what you have said, could occur at any time? Don, is that
yes.
Your understanding?
Yes. Back to the old commentary.
Well, once the court takes its best shot here, the court says that you're convicted of a felon. This doesn't say you can later change your mind and make it a misdemeanor. Now, if that's your objection, it's well taken, because it doesn't give you that flexibility.
That isn't his position.
No, this would be where, if it's possession of marijuana, and I say 5 years in OCI, suspend execution, and put you on probation, then later you can't reduce
that's
it
to right.
Class A. That's
right.
Fine. But if I suspend imposition, put them on probation, 5 years, sometime during that 5 year period, I come back around and say, I'm going to invoke Section 4, it's a Class A misdemeanor.
Right.
That's right. Go for it and sin no more, whatever.
Well, have that in the form of commentary been done, because that would be understandable. Aside from that, do you offer a motion?
Aside from that, I do not desire to repeat anything that was said at the subcommittee.
You wish to make a motion?
I move we approve it.
We approve Section 4.
Any further
commentary has been.
No, it wasn't. That's what it was. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Carry. Section 5.
Right, this is criteria for discharge. And the court empowered to suspend imposition or execution of sentence or place of penal probation may discharge the defendant.
Yes.
Here's the limitation that the conviction is for an offense other than murder, treason, or a Class A or B felony. And court is of the opinion no proper purpose would be served on imposing any condition upon the defendant's release. In other words, the court just sends him hence and says, this is, you're discharged, and there's no bench probation or anything. He doesn't have to report back to the court. He still stands convicted. This doesn't expunge the record or anything like that. It just allows the court to let the man go without penalty. I suppose I should say something about sub 4 and 5. Defendant pleads not guilty and is tried and found guilty. A sentence of discharge is a final judgment on a conviction for all purposes, including an appeal by the defendant. So he can appeal, even though he's no penalties imposed. He can appeal the conviction, but if he pleads guilty, sub 5, not appealable, but for all other purposes, it's a final judgment condition.
Amen.
Misdemeanor where the court grants probation to the defendant without any